Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On December 10th, a coalition of immigrant rights activists marked International Human Rights Day by blocking access to an immigration detention center in Elizabeth, New Jersey. This protest was the latest in a series of demonstrations aimed at urging President Obama to end the unprecedented number of deportations that have taken place under his watch. According to immigrant advocacy groups, 1,100 people are being deported every day. President Obama is on track to deport 2 million undocumented immigrants, more than any other president. Federal spending on immigration detention and deportation has more than doubled since 2006 to almost $3 billion a year. Activists are using their bodies to stop deportation buses by sitting in front of them and chaining themselves to the wheels. Since September, more than 80 activists have been arrested. Last month, Ju Hong, a young undocumented student from South Korea, was randomly chosen to sit behind the president during a speech in San Francisco's Chinatown on immigration reform. He interrupted the president's speech and said, quote, "I need your help. Please use your executive order to halt deportations," end quote. 27 House Democrats are calling on the president to end deportations. In an interview with Telemundo over the weekend, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi said the administration should exercise discretion over who is deported. She said she's seen deportations that were, quote, totally unjustified in San Francisco. But the president says he does not have the power to bypass Congress on this issue. So on today's Your Call, we are talking about deportations. What explains the rise in the number of deportations? Who does have the power to stop this? What is the process involved in being deported? And what is the status of immigration reform? Today, we are joined by Ju Hong, immigrant rights activist and member of Aspire, Asian Students Promoting Immigrant Rights Through Education. He graduated from UC Berkeley in 2012 and is currently pursuing a master's degree in public administration at San Francisco State. In July, Ju was arrested at the University of California Regents meeting as they confirmed former Department of Homeland Security President Janet Napolitano as head of the UC system. And Ju joins us on the phone from Alameda. Hi, Ju. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's nice to have you. And we're also joined by Tanya Usueta. She's an organizer with the National Day Laborer Organizing Network and co-founder of the Immigrant Youth Justice League. Tanya is one of many undocumented youth who've stepped into the public light to change the way the media covers the immigration debate. She was recently part of an action stopping a deportation bus in Virginia. Hi, Tanya. Welcome to the show. You're in Washington.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And we're joined by Anoop Prasad, staff attorney with Asian Americans Advancing Justice, Asian Law Caucus in the Immigrant Rights Program. He focuses on representation of low-income Asian Pacific Islander immigrants in deportation proceedings, and his work focuses on the intersection of the immigration and mass incarceration. He's been working on this issue for 9 years, and Anoop joins me in studio. Hi, Anoop. Thank you for coming in.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So, Anoop, I want to start off with you. Let's just go over some of the basics here. So according to the advocacy groups, almost 2 million people have been deported. How do you keep track of these numbers?
The numbers largely come from Homeland Security, which publishes deportation numbers every year. Also, a lot of it just comes from the community and our everyday experience in the detention centers and talking to families who have loved ones deported.
And is it true that ICE used to boast about the numbers of people being deported and now they're not doing that?
Yeah. I mean, just recently, Janet Napolitano, when she was secretary, was bragging about the number of people she had deported and that they were setting record levels of deportations. And even I remember when President Obama was debating Governor Romney, he was talking about the number of people he had deported and promising people that he was deporting 400,000. I believe the term he used was gangbangers every year. But now, in recent time, I've seen the White House is no longer doing that and starting to backpedal away from its record.
Are we seeing any changes? Has it been pretty consistent? I mean, it's kind of mind-boggling to think that 1,100 people are being deported every day. Has that been consistent under the Obama administration?
It's gone up gradually, but it's been largely consistent. And I think it's important to put that number into perspective. If you look back to the post-9/11 era, which is really a dark period of immigration enforcement in this country, where immigration enforcement was really at level highs, we had 165,000 people a year being deported then. Now we have around 410,000 people being deported today. So it's over twice the deportation levels that we were seeing then.
And when you look at the people being deported, who are these people?
It's a cross-section of America when you go into the detention centers. Right now, I've got three grandfathers in detention.
Wow.
There are people who have been here since, 40, 50 years. There are people here in detention who are pregnant, people with disabilities, people who are young, people with mental health issues, age range everywhere from, children are in detention to senior citizens. So it's really just a complete cross-section of the country.
What about their backgrounds?
There are people from all over the world. I have clients in detention from Mexico, from El Salvador, from Cambodia, literally from every continent on the planet. They're in our detention centers.
For some reason, there's kind of people think that most of them are either from Mexico or South America for the most part.
Largely, yes.
They dominate?
Largely, most of the people going through a detention deportation system are from Mexico. But it is actually quite broader than that. Around 10 to 11% of detainees, for example, are Asian Pacific Islanders, which is bigger than the size of their actual population in America, which is only 5%. Mm. So it is a very diverse population. But, a lot of the issues of immigration are being driven by U.S.-Mexico foreign policy and trade policy.
Right. And we'll talk about just what happens, for example, when a child is deported or what happens when a grandfather with a disability is arrested. We'll talk about just what the process is like. But before we do that, Tania Usueta, you're an organizer with the National Day Laborer Organizing Network. How do you explain just this massive number of deportations, almost 2 million under the Obama administration?
It definitely has been a lot of the internal enforcement that has happened. I mean, the way that states have been passing a lot of laws, such as in Arizona, SB 1070, in Georgia, in Alabama, people are being caught in the dragnet of everything that's happening in those state laws, in addition to the increased collaboration between police and immigration enforcement, the increased militarization at the border. At the same time, I think what we're also seeing is that people are speaking out more about it. So while the numbers are rising, I think the number of people who are talking about being in deportation proceedings is also increasing, and we're becoming more aware of it.
And what about you, Ju? We'll talk about what happened when you spoke out at a speech that Obama gave recently in San Francisco's Chinatown. But how do you explain this massive number?
It is simply wrong and inhumane. There are about 1,100 undocumented immigrant community members are facing deportation every single day. I know that my friends are currently in detention center. I know my friends who have been deported because of anti-immigration deportation programs like secure communities. I'm directly affected by it. My family is directly affected by it. That's why it is something that I'm very passionate about. And I think Obama administration should acknowledge wrongdoing against undocumented immigrant communities.
And this is something that probably deserves more attention, but you say that in 2010, your family's home was burglarized, your door was broken, your windows were shattered, someone stole belongings. But because of what's going on, your mom said, don't call the cops. Can you talk about that and why she made that decision?
Absolutely. So in 2010, on my way home, we realized that our door was broken and the windows were completely shattered and our important belongings were gone, like very important electronics and things that we are value on. And, we are very terrified because it was the first time ever we got burglarized at home. And my first initial reaction was to call the police, but my mom immediately stopped me and said, Jew, do not call the police. What if we get deported? Hmm. And this is something that we go through every single day. This is very ironic because police are supposed to protect every single community. But because of anti-immigration program under Obama administration, they are excluding immigrant community members. And, this is just one of the many undocumented immigrant community members face every single day. And we need to stop the suffering of our community right now. And with the stroke of his pen, he can stop the deportations, and he needs to do it as soon as possible.
Well, and that's what you said to him when you interrupted his speech in San Francisco. Please use your executive order to halt deportations. At 27 House Democrats are calling on him to do this. Nancy Pelosi, the Dreamers, sent out a bunch of press releases late last night saying Nancy Pelosi is now calling on the president to stop deportations. He says he doesn't have the power to do this. Anoop, does he have the power to stop this?
So, the president's been saying that he lacks authority, which is interesting because he stopped justifying it as a policy now, just saying that he doesn't have control over it. And so, as we've been explaining, really, his administration's the one that ramped up the levels of deportations. And it's a little bit disingenuous now that he's saying he no longer has control over his own policies, which have led to this crisis. So, I think there is a constitutional argument about whether or not he can completely shutter an administrative agency. But to say that between completely shuttering ICE and closing it down altogether and between record levels of deportations, of 2 million deportations, there's nowhere in between that he can land is completely false. He can immediately reduce the levels of deportations. Even if he were to cut deportations down by more than half, he would just be returning to George W. Bush's deportation levels.
By half.
By half. Because Bush, in the beginning of his term, was around 160 deportations. That's less than half of what Obama's at now. So even that would give a huge amount of relief to the immigrant community. So there's a huge amount that he can do to reduce the number of deportations.
Why do you think he's deported so many people?
I mean, I think really it's a political calculation. There's no moral or rational justification for what's going on. I think in his mind, it was to win over hardline Republican votes to show that he's been really tough on immigration enforcement. It's a strategy that's failed and actually made it more difficult for him to pass immigration reform. He's basically given away all of his trading chips to the Republicans who only want deportations.
What do you think is going to happen with immigration reform? Because a lot of people are saying because next year is an election year, if nothing happens this year and there's not much time left, that means it can't come back until 2015.
That's what I've heard, and I understand Congress packed up shop for the year and with nothing being done on immigration reform in Congress. So whether or not it's politically feasible, I don't know, but every day that something doesn't happen, another 1,100 people are going to get deported.
Tanya, do you agree? Do you think the president has deported so many people trying to sort of say, look, I'm tough on deportations, now let's do something on immigration reform? Do you think that was his strategy?
If that's been his strategy, it's taking a long time. I mean, I'm originally from Illinois. President Obama was my senator, and I remember back then he voted to increase funding for the border, for example. And so, consistently he's been on the side of enforcement, and he just keeps telling us that our families are important, that he is on the side of immigrants, but he hasn't done anything until now, even up to now. And he definitely has the power to do it. He has shown that he has the power to do it around deferred action. He can address secure communities. He can talk about prosecutorial discretion and the people who are criminalized still and within high priority deportations. And so, if that's been his strategy, it's been a long time since it's been time to start doing the immigrant rights part.
That is Tanya Usueta, an organizer with the National Day Laborer Organizing Network and co-founder of the Immigrant Youth Justice League. Tanya is one of many undocumented youth who've decided to step into the light to change the way the media cover this issue. She was part of an action stopping a deportation bus in Virginia. Ju Hong is an immigrant rights activist and member of the Asian Students Promoting Immigrant Rights Through Education. Ju was arrested at a UC Regents meeting when they confirmed Janet Napolitano as head of the UC system. Just last month, Ju interrupted President Obama's speech in Chinatown in San Francisco, saying, I need your help. He was talking about friends being separated on Thanksgiving. Use your executive order to halt deportations. And Anoop Prasad is staff attorney with Asian Americans Advancing Justice. He's been working on this issue for 9 years. So what are your thoughts on this? What are your thoughts on the fact that the Obama administration has deported more immigrants, 2 million almost, than any other president? What explains this? Also, we'll talk about how immigrants are now the fastest growing segment of the U.S. prison population. Federal spending on detention and deportation has more than doubled since 2006 to almost $3 billion a year. If you're an immigrant, What are your thoughts on this? If you're affected by this, like Ju said that someone broke into his house, but they didn't call the cops out of fear. If you've got similar stories, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. Or if you agree with the administration's policy, give us a call and let us know why. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. So, Ju, can you give us a little background on your story? Your family is from South Korea. When did you come to the States?
I came to the United States from South Korea in 2001 when I was 11 years old with my mom and my older sister.
And you're currently undocumented?
That's correct. I'm currently undocumented. I'm currently pursuing my master's degree in public administration at San Francisco State University. And I graduated from UC Berkeley with a degree in political science. And, you know, ever since I came to this country, I grew up just like many other American students. I went to public school, spoke English, joined student government, and participated in many different sports teams. But during senior year in my high school, while I was filling out my college application, I learned that our family came to the United States from South Korea with a tourist visa, and she extended it additional 6 months. And within those periods, she tried to adjust our immigration status, but it did not work out, and we became undocumented. And, you know, when I first found out as an undocumented, I really didn't know what it meant until I realized I'm unable to get a job, obtain a driver's license, or receive any type of financial aid. And worst of all, I learned that, you know, I was at risk of facing deportation. And, you know, it was very, you know, life-changing moment because of all the limitations and, you know, obstacles that I had to go through as an undocumented. So it's been a very difficult struggle.
When you interrupted the president's speech last month, you got national media attention. Are you afraid that now that the light is shining on you that you might get deported, or do you feel like you might be safe because you now have so much attention?
I think that because I have national attention, I think I'm more safer in a way because I have a lot of public support. I have a lot of undocumented immigrant community members who are really supporting me and in different ways. But what I'm more concerned about is people who do not have this spotlight, people who are currently at the detention center, people who have been wrongfully deported under Obama administration. Because they don't have a public spotlight or media attention, they've been getting deported in a very unjust way. And so my responsibility as an immigrant rights activist, I'll make sure to make their voices heard, and I make sure to continue to advocate for a fair and humane comprehensive immigration reform and continue to pressure President Obama to end the suffering of our community.
Anoop, how does ICE decide who to deport?
I think what's really terrifying about the system is that it's completely arbitrary, that you really have no way of really knowing what they're going to do on a given day. Decision about whether or not to deport someone, whether or not to detain someone, is largely driven by quotas, deportation quotas that individual ICE officers have to meet to reach that 400,000 number, and individual daily detention quotas where ICE is required to detain 34,000 people. If you happen to encounter an ICE officer on a day that they have a shortage on their bed quota, you're going to get detained. The next day, maybe you wouldn't have. And it really is quite arbitrary how they decide what they're going to do with someone.
Can you tell us about this quota? It's known on Capitol Hill as, quote, the bed mandate.
Right. So in Congress has mandated that immigration detain 34,000 people a day, regardless of whether or not it makes sense to detain 34,000 people a day, whether or not it's necessary. Congress tells ICE that they have to pay for 34,000 beds every day. And this is really being driven by the private prison industry, which owns about half those beds. So ICE contracts with private detention centers that are run for profit and are traded on the stock exchange that run these facilities to pay for about 17 to 18,000 of those beds. And so they in turn hire lobbyists who lobby elected officials to push for more beds.
Who backed this mandate, this 34,000 detainee per day mandate?
It had pretty bipartisan support, actually. I remember it came up for a vote, I think, in 2010 to defund the mandate. It was actually a Democratic senator from Louisiana who voted against defunding the mandate.
The Washington Post has a piece about this, and it took a look at one day. So in one day, 33,391 immigrants were held in federal custody on September 7th. This is a single-day snapshot provided by ICE. 19,864 were convicted criminals, according to the agency. Yet, writes the Washington Post, ICE's definition of criminals includes a broad range of offenders. A 2009 internal review found that 11% of detainees had been convicted of violent crime. So what do the numbers tell you?
Yeah, they do like to play a number game about who they're detaining, who they're deporting. And yeah, so they use the term convicted criminal, and then when you start to actually dig into that, you realize that sometimes it's just immigration offenses, sometimes it's minor things like traffic offenses, and they charge them as high-level offenders. Yeah, when you get into the detention centers, you quickly realize that very, very, very few of the people there pose really any serious threat to anyone.
Let's take a caller before we go to break. Let's hear from John in San Francisco. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I am generally not in favor of stopping the deportation program. However, I'm very sympathetic to not breaking up families. And I would like to hear more from your guests concerning how families are being broken up. And then I also have a tougher question for them is, why do they think they should be allowed to stay in the United States when other people who are seeking immigration have to wait in line in their own countries?
All right. And, you know, stay on the line, John, because you might want to have a back and forth with Ju and Tanya and Anoop. So Ju, do you want to first take the question? First off, talk about some stories of families that you know that have been broken up.
Sure. I mean, I could definitely talk about my family's situation. I've been living in this country for the past 13 years, and I didn't know about my immigration status until senior in high school. And the truth of the matter is, when we came with the tourist visa, we actually tried to adjust our immigration status to stay in this country permanently, and we hired an immigration attorney. But the immigration attorney took a lot of money from us, and we realized that he was actually a scammer. And so we didn't end up completed the file, and we became undocumented. And this is one of the many undocumented immigrant family members came to this country, quote-unquote, legally, whatever the term that we want to call it. But it did not. We cannot adjust our immigration status because of this broken immigration laws and this people take advantage of broken immigration laws to take advantage of undocumented immigrant family members like me. And because of that, for past 13 years, I have not seen my grandfather or my grandmother. And several years ago, my grandfather passed away, and I cannot visit his funeral because of my immigration status. And currently, my grandmother is very ill, and I want to visit her, but I have a very limitations to go visit her because of my immigration status. This is one of the, 11.5 million undocumented immigrant family members going through every single day. And this is not a very simple and straightforward issue. It's a very complicated and complex issue. And I think that it is good to have really a constructive dialogue to find ways to solve our broken immigration system.
And just quickly, Anoop, we have to go to break soon. Can Dreamers leave the country or?
Under limited circumstances, they can travel outside the country.
Okay. And we'll get more stories about families right after the break. That was Ju Hong, an immigrant rights activist from South Korea. He's a member of the Asian Students Promoting Immigrant Rights Through Education. Tanya Usueta is an organizer with the National Day Labor Organizing Network, also an undocumented young person who's telling her story to change the way the media covers this issue. Anoop Prasad is a staff attorney at Asian Americans Advancing Justice. And on today's Your Call, we are talking about the large number of deportations under the Obama administration, almost 2 million, 1,100 a day. So what are your thoughts on this? Do you agree with the policy? Do you disagree? And what questions do you have for our young activists on today's show? It's Your Call. We'll be back after this.
If you have a perspective that you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question you feel needs to be answered, please do get in touch with us this morning by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also email your question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up in 30 minutes at 11 o'clock from the BBC, World Have Your Say.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about widening inequality in the U.S. and CEO pay. According to Bloomberg News, the ratio of CEO to worker pay has increased 1,000% since 1950. So how did this happen so quickly? CEOs now make about 204 times that of the average worker. That's Fortune 500 CEOs. So what would you do about rising inequality and CEO pay? That's tomorrow. And then on Wednesday, we will talk about energy alternatives. If you've got a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about immigration and deportations. Under President Obama, almost 2 million people have been deported, 1,100 a day. Federal spending on detention and deportation has more than doubled since 2006 to almost $3 billion a year. And today we're talking about these issues with Ju Hong. He's an immigrant rights activist and a member of Asian Students Promoting Immigrant Rights Through Education. Last month, he interrupted President Obama during a speech in Chinatown in San Francisco, saying, "I need your help. I know people who will be separated on Thanksgiving. Use your executive order to halt deportations." Tanya Usueta is an organizer with the National Day Laborer Organization. She's an undocumented young person who decided to step into the light to change the way the media cover these issues. She was part of an action stopping a deportation bus in Virginia. And Anup Prasad is staff attorney at Asian Americans Advancing Justice. He's been working on these issues for 9 years. And John called earlier to talk about families that are being disconnected and torn apart. Tanya, can you give us some stories?
Yeah, I mean, I so my work with Andalan is precisely to support the work against deportations that people are doing locally. And we've been working a lot in New Orleans. I wanted to give you the example of what's happening in New Orleans. So for a long time there, we've been working with an organization called the Congress of Day Laborers of New Orleans, and they had been getting a lot of cases of people who were literally outside of their house, getting their groceries from the car to the house when an immigration agent would come up to them, fingerprint them, ask them their immigration status, and if they had any sort of background, you know, if they'd been deported in the past, for example, while they were crossing the border, or they had any, like, prior criminal history, they would detain them and put them in deportation proceedings. And eventually, the local organizers there and with support of Andalan, discovered that what was happening is that there's a pilot program called the Criminal Alien Removal Initiative, or CARI. And it's a program that's happening, as far as we know, only in New Orleans right now, where immigration agents basically drive around neighborhoods that are high areas of where immigrants are, and they go to apartment buildings, they go to stores, they go to street corners and fingerprint people and detain them. And, you know, when immigration has responded to questions from the media, and what they always say is, you know, we're only detaining people who are high priority. And this gets into the conversation of, you know, who's considered a criminal, what they mean when they say criminal, what they mean when they say high priority. And like, you know, your guests were saying before, it's often people who have only immigration histories or who have things that are considered felonies under immigration law but not in criminal law. And so what we know and what we see is that families are being separated just like that. So that's one example of something that's actually a program that is under the Obama administration that started under President Obama, and one of the things that the president could also change.
Anup, what would you add?
So just a couple of things. In the last 2 years, we've deported 205,000 parents of minor U.S. citizen children. So around a half of the deportations or a quarter of the deportations are of minor parents of minor children. And I just want to share two stories of people who are considered high-priority criminal aliens for ICE in detention today. One is a man named Damone Priup, who's currently in a county jail in Richmond, California. He's been here since he was less than 1 year old. He has a green card. He was a refugee fleeing the genocide in Cambodia. He's a single father to an 11-year-old son. He is detained under mandatory detention, has been there for the last 3 months, because he was arrested for a joint of marijuana in 2004. And under our immigration laws, even though he's a green card holder, that makes him deportable and makes him subject to mandatory detention. So his son's been without a father for the last 3 months because of this joint of marijuana, and ICE would say he's a convicted criminal, he's a high-priority deport, but it makes no rational sense.
So where is his son? I mean, what happens when parents get deported? What happens to their kids?
So his son's been living with his grandmother, who's currently recovering from breast cancer and has been taking the bus to school every day and getting back home on his own, but he's been without a dad for 3 months now.
Mm. And you had another example?
Yeah, our example is a man named Eddie Padilla, who's currently detained in the Sacramento County Jail. He's lived here with a green card since 1966. He's a grandfather. He has six grandchildren and four children. He's worked in the U.S. his entire life. 10 years ago, he was arrested for having a firearm he purchased, which was unlicensed. It wasn't used. It was just found on him. And they came to his house and arrested him earlier this year for an offense that took place a decade ago. And again, they'll refer to him as a violent felon, but it really makes no sense.
How many deportation centers do we have in Northern California?
There are three facilities in Northern California.
Holding how many people?
There's probably around 1,200 people in those three facilities.
Are you able to go to these facilities and see them?
I'm in those facilities every week.
What strikes you about them? Compared to are they private or are they run by the
These
state?
Are all county jails.
Oh, county jails.
They very much feel like jails. The conditions in there are horrific. The food, the lack of access to medical care. And they're really designed to isolate detainees from the rest of the world. They're put in remote places whenever possible, like remote parts of Yuba County. They've made phone calls extremely expensive. For a lot of my clients, making a 3 or 4 man phone call will cost $6 or $7 with the profits going to a private company. And so it's designed to really isolate them so no one knows what's going on in there.
And I'll get to calls in just a couple minutes. We've got full lines, but I wanted to ask the rest of John's question, and I'm sure others also have this question. Jew, what would you say to John, who says, why do you think you should be allowed to stay in the United States?
Like I said, I think that this immigration itself is completely broken. And, you know, I've been living in this country for 13 years, and I consider myself as American, but I do not have any papers to work here. You know, I pay taxes. You know, I have my friends here, my family's here, and I want to build my families here. And I think that, you know, all I want to do is contribute to this country, a better nation. And I think people need to understand about personal immigration stories like mine. And I think that there are thousands of undocumented immigrant family members who simply just wanted to live a decent life with their family members. And that's what we want. And we don't really care about what politicians are doing. We don't care whether President Obama blaming on Congress or Congress blaming on President Obama. All we care about is, you know, really core values is just to, you know, reunite with the families and live a different life.
And Tanya, how would you answer that question? Why should you be allowed to stay in the U.S.?
I mean, I think for me, my family story is very similar, right? We came here because my dad was offered a job, and then we made our life here. And I think, you know, when people in the United States need people to come here to work, what they don't recognize is that they come with families and they come with entire lives. And so, you know, I'm the child of someone who was brought here to work. And yes, like I have like grown roots in the United States. But, you know, in addition to all of that, like besides my own personal story, I think it's important to say that it's not a matter of undocumented immigrants versus everyone else who's waiting outside. Like, we're all victims of the same broken immigration system. Like, we shouldn't have people waiting inside or outside the United States for decades, waiting to see their children or in fear of deportation constantly. It shouldn't be one of us against the other. We just need the immigration system to be changed so that it actually serves what people need.
What kind of job was your dad offered?
He was offered a job in a printing press, and he was promised that if he came with a family, our immigration status was going to be like addressed and changed, but that never happened. And my parents planned on leaving, but then, you know, my sister and I went to high school here, we went to college, we have lives here now, and it's been 20 years, and that whole time we've been living undocumented. Mm.
And that is Tanya Usueta, an organizer with the National Day Labor Organizing Network. Ju Hong is an immigrant rights activist. And Anup Prasad is a staff attorney with Asian Americans Advancing Justice. And we'll go to a few more calls, and you can join us in a few minutes at 866-798-8255. What do you think of the administration's deportation policy, deporting 2 million immigrants, more than any other president in the history of the U.S.? The cost has also increased drastically to almost $3 billion a year since 2006. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's go next to Rocky in San Francisco. Hi, Rocky.
Hi, good morning, Rose, and to your guests. I've been listening and to your guests, and I'm sympathetic to their stories. I've learned something I didn't know before, especially about a quota system, which seems to be a vulnerable point of attack against the administration and Congress. Maybe there's some political deal behind it, in fact, it is as described.
So you're talking about the 34,000 quota?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'd never heard that before. It would have been interesting to have confronted President Obama when he was here. And he might have, I doubt that he could have been quick enough on his feet to respond. But in any case, what I'm really calling about is just the lack of definition here. You've pressed home on some questions about the identity of the people who are being deported under orders of deportation, but we still haven't gotten down to the nitty-gritty. How many of the people up for deportation are actually guilty of so-called nonviolent crimes? If you consider, say, selling meth and heroin on street corners throughout the western states, throughout the United States, as being nonviolent, I disagree. It's extremely expensive and extremely harmful to the people who are in a position now to buy it. And secondly, much of the national forest land in California and even above has been colonized by Mexican drug cartels growing marijuana plantations, pouring endless amounts of pollutants into rivers and streams and making those forests unusable by ordinary citizens. And that's something that's not described.
Well, let's get a response. Anup, what are your thoughts on that?
It sounds like you're talking about an issue of the war on drugs and the drug enforcement policies, which I guess is a different conversation, although obviously that conversation spills over into a bunch of other facets of law enforcement and the way our government operates. But if you look at ICE's own numbers, they'll tell you that the majority of people they're deporting have no criminal history. We're not talking about they don't have nonviolent criminal history. They have no criminal history. And I can tell you the vast majority of people in detention centers, the most common criminal conviction other than traffic offenses and things is simple possession of drugs, but it's not drug trafficking. They're not deporting drug kingpins. The idea that somehow deportations are going to make us safer is a false promise. When you start tearing families apart, you're really tearing communities apart and tearing people's lives apart, which really makes people's lives and their communities less safe. So the idea that this is a good law enforcement mechanism to make us safer is really just a false promise.
And this has been widely documented by groups like the ACLU, right? So if we were to go read these reports, we'd actually find out who's being deported.
Right. And you can go to ICE's website and they'll tell you, you know, the vast majority of people are not the people who are engaging in drug trafficking.
And when you say vast majority, what do you mean?
We're talking about 85-90% of people in detention have nothing to do with things like what you're describing.
We have a fairly related question from Rolf in Emeryville, who says, I'm interested in hearing about how cities like San Francisco cooperate or don't cooperate with federal immigration agents. Does this make cities safe for havens or not really?
So San Francisco recently adopted a policy that they're not going to turn people over to ICE for deportation, except in a few limited circumstances. And so it's really a step to allow San Francisco to be welcoming to all of its community members, including undocumented community members, and also ensure that immigrants in San Francisco have trust in our local police and are willing to cooperate with them.
All right. Well, thank you for the call, Rocky, and thank you for the email, Rolf. And Rocky, we can find an article to put up about who's actually being deported. So thanks for calling. Let's go next to Serge in Santa Cruz. Hi, Serge. Welcome to the show.
Hey. Good afternoon. Thank you. I'm really really interesting how, for my situation, I've been here in the United States since 1959. I was brought here by my parents. I had no idea I was a citizen. Didn't even know what citizenship was. I basically grew up and went to school, learned English, and I even went to Vietnam and fought for my country, came back and got rocks thrown at me, and I was called baby killer and called a lot of things that, you know, it wasn't really my fault. I did what my country wanted me to do. I went to war. And then I come to recently find out about 4 years ago that I was not a legal citizen because of some minor paperwork issue that wasn't done when my parents brought me to the United States.
Hmm.
Now, because of that, I cannot become a citizen. I've been married to my wife for 34 years. I own a business. I own two homes. I mean, if I were to be deported and sent back to the country I came from, my God, I wouldn't know anybody there.
Wow.
They would be taking away the worker of the family, my children, and everybody related to me would be losing. The income that I'd provide for them would no longer be there. My business would fall, and a lot of other things would happen. And it would turn maybe my kids into criminals because they'd have to go out and steal or rob or do whatever they could to survive. But really, the interesting thing is this. When we have undocumented workers working in the United States of America, they are paying taxes. And at the end of the year, when everybody else is filing, these people are not. That money that they're paying into the government stays there. The other interesting thing is this. I mean, why not open some doors for people like this? Give them opportunities. This is a land of opportunity.
Hmm.
They pay coyotes or they pay people to bring them into the United States thousands of dollars. Why doesn't Congress of the United States of America figure out a plan where they could charge the people the same amount of money they pay to these coyotes, let them into the country, let them work, let them get a license, let them buy a car, let them buy insurance, let them...
Well, Serge, thanks so much for calling. Anoop, how often does this happen? I mean, Serge has just found out he's undocumented 4 years ago.
I mean, I think it does happen more often than people realize just because our immigration laws are so complex. And last week, the spokesperson or former spokesperson for Arizona State Patrol realized she was undocumented and resigned from her job.
Wow.
but didn't know for much of her life. But if you know, have any questions, you're happy to call us. We can give you a legal consultation about your situation. My number is 415-896-1701.
So what should they do if they what should Serge do right now?
There are really complex issues with naturalization eligibility for Vietnam War veterans. So there might be some options there, but I'm happy to talk it through with you.
Well, all right. Again, the number is 415-896-1701, and you can find a link at yourcallradio.org. Thanks for calling, Serge. Let's go next to Stephen in Santa Cruz. Hi, Stephen.
I was told to keep it brief. I'll try. I am Mexican American. I was raised and I was born here. I raised here. So are my parents. I used to work in the orchards of Cupertino when I was a boy, and was sent to school and got a degree and bought a home and all of this because my grandfather waited in line and waited years for permission to live here. He was legal. He did it the right way. He paid the fees. He did it right. And I'm torn, I think. On one hand, I don't like this idea that there are third-party prison systems being allocated immigrants and beds being filled up because of quotas. But on the other hand, I'm really bothered by these cliches that are being uttered right and left about how America is tearing these families apart. For me, from my perspective, in all honesty, I've got immigrant friends who are also waiting in line. And if anybody's tearing you apart, it's you and your parents tore you apart. They made the wrong decisions, not the United States. And Mexico made wrong decisions by not funding their people properly and not coming up with programs and not having the resources, I suppose, to do what was necessary to keep you in Mexico in the first place, or Korea, or wherever you're from. I think the immigration policies of this country are just fine. You are not victims. You are breaking the law,
And I'm sorry, that's inconvenient, but that's the way that it is.
All right, let's get a response from our guests. Ju, what would you say to Stephen? Ju, are you still with us?
Yes. First of all, I sympathetic about your family's situation. I'm sorry to hear that your father had to wait it long and paid a lot of enormous amount of fees to get citizenship status, as well as your friends who waited a very long time to get citizenship status. And it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be waited that long, like you mentioned. I agree. And if you tell me if there's a line, please let me know. I'm willing to wait the line. But the truth of the matter is there's no line. The immigration system itself is arbitrary. It's very complex and complicated. There's no way I could, quote-unquote, waiting a line and figure out ways to adjust my immigration status. And like I mentioned earlier, we came illegal way. If you don't talk about illegality, you know, we came with a tourist visa and we tried to adjust our immigration status and we hired an immigration attorney. But we realized that they were scammers and they took, thousands of dollars from us. And, we misfiled the immigration case and therefore we became undocumented. And so, that's just one of the many immigration stories that we have to deal with because of a broken immigration system. And if you're talking about law, a law itself is broken and law itself is inhumane and unjust, as we talked about it throughout this program. Our family, are very afraid to contact police because of the federal government anti-immigration deportation programs like secure communities. And I heard stories of a young woman who was sexually harassed, who happened to be undocumented, and called the police. But the police, instead of arresting the husband or the partner, the police actually detained and deport that young woman because she doesn't have an immigration status. And so we have to look at this immigration issue in a broader perspective because this is not very simple ways to fix our immigration status.
And Tanya, how would you respond to Stephen?
Yeah, I mean, two things. I think one, that when we talk about people tearing families apart, we literally mean immigration agents coming into a house and like tearing a baby away from their mother. And so it may sound like cliche to you, but I have talked to the people and I have heard them cry and I've heard them tell the story. And so it's definitely not cliches or numbers that we're dealing with. It's people. And, you know, things are a lot more complicated than, you know, did Mexico have the resources to keep them there? We're living in a global economy where the United States has a lot of responsibility in terms of not only pulling people this way, but also in the way that our countries have been able or not been able to develop. But honestly, to me, it's not even about all that. It's literally about the situation that people are going through right now. There are 11 million people who are living in the United States, a lot of whom are at risk of deportation, you know, whether they call the police themselves because they need help or whether they get stopped for a traffic violation. And they're here because they wanted to survive. And I guess what I would ask your listeners to ask themselves is, what wouldn't they do for their children? I think, you know, my parents are here because they wanted our family to survive. And to them, if that meant crossing a border, like that's what it meant. Like, what wouldn't you do for your children? And those are, coming here is not easy. Those are the risks that people take because they want their families to survive.
Anything to add, Anoop?
No, I mean, I think that's exactly right. It's really about families, and they're literally being torn apart from each other.
Well, thanks for calling, Stephen. You might want to see this documentary, Harvest of Empire, that looks at why so many people from South America and Central America have decided to come to the United States in the first place. We've got just a few minutes left. Quickly, can you tell us, Anoop, just what you found in terms of conditions inside of the deportation centers? CBS just had a piece about ICE not reporting to the Department of Homeland Security all allegations of sexual assault. I understand that, that those numbers are pretty high.
There are really high rates of sexual assault. PBS did a great documentary on Frontline a couple of years back on specifically on the sexual assault rates happening. And I think a lot of the reason why that happens so much is that ICE, in an attempt to create a system which really is opaque and that no one can really see into what's going on, has created this network of detention facilities, some privately owned, some federally owned, some in county jails, scattered over in hundreds of facilities across the country. And so they really have no ability to engage in meaningful oversight of these facilities. But at the end of the day, if you can't detain 34,000 people without horrific abuses taking place, you should get out of the business of detaining 34,000 people.
And again, this is a congressional directive known on Capitol Hill as the, quote, bed mandate. One of our callers said he had never heard of this. Do most people know about this, this 34,000 person per day mandate?
No. So much of the detention system is just out of the limelight. People don't realize that, you know, there's a detention facility in downtown San Francisco in the financial district. People walk by it every day without knowing. People don't know that there's a detention facility in Richmond, California. So, you know, they've done a really effective job of hiding what goes on in detention centers from the public.
And again, federal spending on detention and deportation has more than doubled since 2006 to almost $3 billion a year. What's next for 2014? Where is this going?
I think what we're going to see is continued brave actions by immigrant community members engaging in things like civil disobedience. They shut down ICE offices in D.C. and Los Angeles this morning.
This morning.
And so I think you're just going to see continued pressure for the government to act.
And Ju, final thoughts from you, about 20 seconds. Where do you see this going?
We will continue to pressure President Obama to halt deportations. As Anup mentioned, we will see courageous undocumented immigrant youth across the country doing the civil disobedience action and shutting down ICE offices across the country, leading the hunger strike, and find ways to make our voices heard. And hopefully President Obama will act and halt deportations. And we will also continue to pressure Congress to pass a humane and fair and a just comprehensive immigration reform.
Ju Hong is an immigrant rights activist. He interrupted President Obama when he was in Chinatown in San Francisco last month. Tanya Usueta is an organizer with the National Day Laborer Organizing Network. She was part of an action stopping a deportation bus in Virginia. And Anup Prasad is a staff attorney with Asian Americans Advancing Justice, working on this issue for 9 years. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. How should we tackle the increasing wealth gap? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about widening inequality in the U.S. and CEO pay. According to Bloomberg News, the ratio of CEO to worker pay has increased 1,000% since 1950. Fortune 500 CEOs make 204 times that of the average worker. So how did CEO pay increase by so much so quickly? And what would you do about rising inequality and CEO pay? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.